Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. It's the Thanksgiving Day holiday here in the United States, a time when many Americans take stock of the year, reflect a bit, and maybe show some attitude of gratitude about various things. And joining us in the studio once again is Dan Friedel. Welcome, Dan, and happy Thanksgiving.
Sporty Thanksgiving greetings to you, Sonny. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Dan, let me first say thank you for hosting the past four shows.
Yeah, so it's been always, it's a pleasure to come in and sit in the big chair, and I'm grateful that you have entrusted me with the duties when you've been off this year. So thank you very much, Sonny.
Well, Dan, from a sporting aspect, are there any particular stories from 2019 that really caught your eye, imagination, and that you're thankful for?
So I am thankful for another great year in sports. Some of the big stories that I'm thankful for this year included the local baseball team here in Washington, D.C., the Washington Nationals, who play at Nats Park, just about 2 miles, about 3 kilometers down the street from VOA's studios here in Washington, D.C. Now, I've worked at baseball games in D.C. about 50 games a year for 8 years, so I've seen about 400 baseball games here in Washington, so it's about time that I got to see the Nats make the World Series. So I'm thankful that the Nats managed to make their way into the baseball playoffs, get through the first wild card game, defeat the Los Angeles Dodgers in the first round of the playoffs, and the St. Louis Cardinals in the National League Championship Series, and then get to the World Series against the Houston Astros. I'm thankful for that for sure.
From a historical perspective, Dan, Washington did not have a baseball team for more than 30 years, but it's been almost 100 years since there was a World Series champion here in Washington.
Yeah, the Washington Senators were a team that played in Washington in two different phases of their existence, in the first part of the 20th century and in the middle part of the 20th century. Then there was no team here for a while because the team moved away. The team that is now the Washington Nationals used to be the Montreal Expos. They played in Quebec, Canada, the city of Montreal. And, you know, the Expos had some outstanding players. Just a few come to mind. Andre Dawson and Tim Raines were Hall of Fame outfielders. Gary Carter was a catcher who won the World Series with the 1986 New York Mets. And two extremely famous pitchers of the recent generations, Pedro Martinez and Randy Johnson, started their careers with the Expos. The Expos never made the World Series, and in fact, they only made the playoffs once in 1981. Now, the team moved to Washington in the middle part of the first decade of this century, and oddly enough, the only time that the Nats had a 500 or better record was that first season in 2005 when they finished 81-81. That kicked off a number of losing seasons, which actually set the table for them to be a pretty good team in the current decade.
If we look at this past season, though, Dan, the Nationals captured the imagination of fans here in Washington as well as other areas of the country, kind of from a storybook arc, the way they started their season. Talk about that.
Yeah, so the 2019 season. Now, some of the pundits thought that the Nats would do well this year with a mix of outstanding starting pitchers and some up-and-coming young players, along with a few veterans. Bryce Harper, who was this dynamic young outfielder for the Nats, came up in 2012 and really sparked the team to start making the playoffs, but he left in the offseason as a free agent, went to sign with the division rival Philadelphia Phillies, and the Nats really struggled in the first part of the season. They looked like a team that was going to finish in the middle of the pack somewhere heading into the end of May. It really seemed like they might be in rebuilding mode, but a few players sparked the team heading into June. The last 100 or so games of the season, the Nats had one of the best records in baseball. And they made the playoffs as a wild card team, which means that they were not a division winner, but they were one of the best other teams. And that set up a dramatic wild card game against the Milwaukee Brewers that the Nats won at the end of the game, thanks to this big hit from their young Dominican star player, Juan Soto. Then that set up a five-game series, best-of-five series, with the Los Angeles Dodgers, who had been in the World Series the two previous years. The Dodgers were the odds-on favorites to knock the Nats out without any trouble.
Mm.
The exciting thing for me was I was in attendance in the stands for that first wild card game against the Brewers and really got to see the energy in the stadium of everybody being excited about this big play and the big victory. Really the first clinching victory in the history of the Nats. And then I was also in attendance for a couple of games against the Dodgers, a loss and then a win. And I was actually going to California the night that the Nats defeated the Dodgers to advance to the next round, thanks to two key home runs against Clayton Kershaw, who has been historically the Dodgers' best pitcher in the last 10 to 15 years, late in that game. And then Howie Kendrick hit a dramatic grand slam to put the Nats ahead for good and clinch that series. It was really a testament to the way that the Nats were not ever really getting down, even if they were losing. They always seemed to think that they had a chance to win.
Having a chance to win in Houston, they won four times in Houston during the World Series. How would you rate their chances of doing that before the World Series began?
The thing about baseball that I think about all the time is that you talk about home field advantage in sports. Like, you have the big crowd behind you in a soccer stadium or in a basketball arena. You always have that energy and you're shooting a free throw and the crowd is booing at you if you're a visiting player or you have trouble organizing the offense because you can't communicate with your teammates if you've got 80,000 people making noise when you want some quiet. In baseball, the way the game works is that the home team always gets the last chance to bat. So, like, no bigger home field advantage in any sport than baseball. Like, you always get to take the last shot. Think of it in basketball. If the
right.
home team always got to take the last shot, the home team would win the close games a lot. So the odd thing about this World Series, best of seven, which means you have to win four games, and each game of the World Series was won by the visiting team, including the clinching seventh game by the Nats on October 30th. Really amazing against the odds kind of statistical anomaly in this World Series. So I was able to be in the stadium for the three games that were played in Washington in the World Series. And it was really kind of a downer. The Nats were behind early in each one of those games and never really made a comeback. And had to watch, just like everybody else, the Nats win the World Series on television, on the road, in Houston. But I think all of the fans in Washington are thrilled that they won, regardless of how it happened.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. It's the Thanksgiving Day holiday, and I'm chatting with Dan Friedell about some of the sporting events he's thankful for in 2019. What other sporting activities caught your eye this year, Dan?
So, Sonny, when I was in here helping you out, when you were out some of the time earlier in the summer, we saw a lot of NBA activity in May and June, which included the unprecedented playoff run by the Toronto Raptors, who went on to defeat the Golden State Warriors to win the NBA championship 4-2. The first time in NBA history that a team not in the United States has won the title. Of course, there were only two teams in the NBA, the Toronto Raptors and the Vancouver Grizzlies, that were not playing in the United States. The Grizzlies, of course, moved to Memphis. But seeing, Kawhi Leonard, seeing Masai Ujiri, the top executive from the Raptors make these moves, even the kind of controversial firing, of Dwayne Casey, who had led the Raptors to really good records in recent years, firing him in the offseason and elevating Nick Nurse to be the head coach. Some of those moves, I remember talking with our friend Momoyo Hoops Hamza about a year ago saying, you know, is this move going to pay off for the Raptors? And here it really did. An amazing victory. International players like Pascal Siakam from Cameroon establishing themselves. Of course, some elements of the finals, you saw Kevin Durant suffer a serious injury. You saw Klay Thompson suffer a serious injury for the Warriors. Might have made things a little bit different, but congrats to the Raptors for ending the Warriors' run of dominance and bringing a little bit of an international flavor to the NBA playoffs.
You mentioned Pascal Siakam, Dan. He was named the most improved player in the NBA last season. And Siakam might now be the centerpiece of the Raptors with Kawhi Leonard now with the Clippers.
Yeah, moving to Los Angeles. And, you know, the Eastern Conference is wide open. You've got the Philadelphia 76ers and Joel Embiid. You've got a lot of young players. You've got the Eastern Conference. You've got Giannis Antetokounmpo from the Milwaukee Bucks. With LeBron in the West and with Kawhi Leonard in the West and some of these key players in the West, obviously the Western Conference is going to be a battle to the championship there. But in the Eastern Conference, it's going to give some of these players like Siakam, some of these players like Embiid, Giannis a chance to maybe push their team into the finals. Of course, in the Raptors' case, the finals again. We'll see what happens.
Well, Dan, two big international football tournaments overlapped in 2019. We had the Women's World Cup in France, and for a couple weeks, that tournament was overlapped by the Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Egypt. Let's give a shout out to the Desert Foxes of Algeria, who lifted the Africa Cup for a second time. But I know many American fans, Dan, really had their eyes on France and this U.S. women's national soccer team, which certainly made many fans proud.
Yeah, you know, led by Jill Ellis, who announced that she was retiring from coaching the U.S. women's national team after the World Cup festivities came to an end. If you go back to the first round of the group phase, there was some anxiety that this Women's World Cup with an expanded field was going to be kind of a long series of mismatches. The first game that the United States played on June 12th was a 13-0 drubbing of Thailand, which got a lot of commentators agitated. But it really showed that the top eight or so teams in the world are pretty even. The United States was not a dominant winner like they had been 4 years before. You've got teams like Japan and Sweden and the Netherlands and Spain and France and Denmark and Brazil. You've got a deeper field at the very top, and they all pushed the American team all the way. You had a exciting match with the home team, France, having a ton of support in a game against the United States in the knockout phase that could have gone either way, and really is going to show that in 4 years it's going to be a tough tournament once again. And I'm thankful for that. I like the competition.
Well, Dan, one of the big sidebar stories during the Women's World Cup, Megan Rapinoe and other players on the American team really kind of spoke out about equal pay. Now, my impression is they were talking about the U.S. Soccer Federation basically giving equal pay to both the men's national team and the women's national team. What's your take on that equal pay controversy?
Well, I'm thankful again. We're talking about gratitude. And, you know, these athletes put in a ton of work, and they get a lot of attention in these big moments like the Women's World Cup. The men get a lot of attention during the Men's World Cup. The USA women's team is the best in the world, and the USA men's team didn't even make the last World Cup. So there is some disparity there if you think about how the women are kind of scratching and clawing to just kind of get through the 3 years between each World Cup, whereas the men are still paid pretty well for being international soccer players. And so I think it's a good conversation to have, and it's nice to see that they're making some steps in the right direction to make sure the women's team is compensated fairly.
Well, Dan, in African athletics, I'm thankful for a couple of Kenyan runners, Eliud Kipchoge and Bridget Koskei. On the same weekend in October, They set world records. Kipchoge became the first runner ever to break 2 hours in a marathon. It was a special marathon. He had pacemakers and other assistance during the race in Vienna. But then the following day, Bridget Koskay set a new women's world record in Chicago, and it really speaks to that human limits, which Kipchoge talks a lot about, that there are no barriers when it comes to what some of these elite athletes can achieve. Your reaction to those world records, Dan?
Well, Sonny, I'll send this back to something that I talked about on the show back in April, I believe, after I came back from a trip to Japan, where I did a 10-mile guided running tour of Tokyo. And my guide and I covered 10 miles in about 2.5 hours. And I look at these times, like 26.2 miles, which is more than twice as long as what I ran in Japan, under the time that I ran 10 miles, they're covering that distance. It's pretty amazing, and certainly shows how, with the help of some enhanced training and some technology and the desire that people can keep getting stronger and doing more, it's very impressive. And I'm thankful that we get to see. We're in this era, Sonny, you and I. You know, the last 50 years, we've seen some tremendous accomplishments by athletes. I'm thankful that I get to be a part of that.
Well, I'm thankful for your contributions on Thanksgiving Day, Dan. Hopefully we'll have more to be thankful for in 2020.
Looking forward to it for sure. Once again, sporty Thanksgiving greetings to you, Sonny. I hope you have a great rest of the day.
I'm VOA Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. My VOA colleague Jim Stevenson joins us now with some recent tennis and boxing highlights. And Jim says his opening serve is Spain lifting the Davis Cup trophy.
Host Spain, led by world number one men's tennis player Rafael Nadal, is holding the Davis Cup for the sixth time and first since 2011.
Well, it has been amazing the whole week. Of course, when you finally win the title after all the things that we went through during this week, and playing at home is something difficult to describe. No, it's an amazing feeling, and especially share this great moment with all the people that supported us during the whole week. It's just unforgettable.
After saving a set point, Nadal beat Denis Shapovalov 6-3, 7-6 on match point to secure a 2-0 victory over Canada. Shapovalov was proud of his team for reaching the Davis Cup final for the first time.
I feel like we've really come really far as a team, as a nation, and definitely we're super proud. Obviously, it sucks losing in the finals, but I'm super proud of everyone. We've put in 120% every single day, so it's amazing how far we've been able to come.
Roberto Bautista Agut returned to the Spanish team after rushing home to be with his father, who passed away. Agut defeated Felix Auger-Aliassime 7-6, 6-3. Auger-Aliassime did what he could.
As any individual would do on this team, I went out there and gave everything. And, you know, when we step on court, we're a team, and I did everything to try and bring a point, but I couldn't.
Amid personal loss, Agut was happy to claim the Davis Cup.
Me and Rafa and all the team, when Rafa won the last point, was amazing. It was an unbelievable feeling.
Feliciano Lopez was at a loss to fully describe Nadal's contribution to the winning effort.
I think he's a great person, he's a great human, and he's a extraordinary tennis player. I've never seen something like this. So what do you want me to say? I mean, it's so tough for me to answer this question, but for sure there's things that Rafa is able to do that nobody's able to do it.
This Davis Cup tournament was the first under the new 18-team format with round-robin play until the quarterfinals. The format led to some controversy when Canada qualified for the quarterfinals with a 2-0 lead over the United States and then gave the U.S. team a walkover in doubles. The 6-love, 6-love win could have affected other nations trying to reach the knockout phase. Novak Djokovic of Serbia voiced his displeasure.
I heard that actually just recently, and I personally don't like that. I mean, that shouldn't be allowed, to be honest. I just feel it's not fair that the opposing team was in USA get 6-love, 6-love, because they are going actually head-to-head to now to against Italy, and then the winner might be, you know, is going to be second, but then that 6-love, 6-love might make a big difference in the calculations for the second best teams in the group.
Andy Murray of Britain agreed.
I don't think that's good, and I think that I felt like one of the positive things to the way the group stages work is that all of the matches are live. There isn't any dead rubbers, so where Canada may have felt that was a dead rubber in theory for them because they were already through, that could have implications.
The incident will be one of several issues to be ironed out as the new Davis Cup format is played in future years. Unbeaten WBC heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder remains unbeaten.
I think I earned my due respect and my credit, you know, to say that I am the hardest hitting puncher in boxing history, period.
One punch was all Wilder needed to successfully defend his World Boxing Council title for the 10th time, knocking out Cuban Luis Ortiz in the 7th round of their bout in Las Vegas. It was a rematch many said Wilder didn't need after narrowly escaping Ortiz last year in Brooklyn, New York.
I started boxing late, so, you know, I'm still learning, and I love to learn. I love to continue to learn, because if I wasn't still learning, then this would be boring to me already. You know, the knockouts that I have, this would be like, it's boring now, you know.
Wilder found himself behind through most of the bout until he unleashed a powerful right cross that landed Ortiz on the canvas. The 34-year-old Wilder now owns a 42-0-1 record with 41 knockouts and has his sights set on a rematch early next year with Britain's Tyson Fury, with the hope of claiming every heavyweight title.
Now we move on to the next phase and chapter in my life. I'm looking to be the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. One champion, one phase, one name. I'm on the pursuit of that, and I'm getting closer and closer each and every time.
Wilder is always quick to remind his power is just as fast as his words.
These guys have to be perfect for 12 rounds. I only have to be perfect for 2 seconds. And in the blink of an eye, bam, baby, good night.
That's World Boxing Council heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder. Bam, baby, good night. And thanks to my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson for that hard-hitting sports package. And I encourage our VOA listeners to check out Jim's weekly Game Room podcast via voanews.com. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. World football's governing body, FIFA, released its latest set of monthly rankings on Thursday. The Lions of Taranga from Senegal remain number one in Africa. The Senegalese have held the top spot on the continent for the past year, and they're 20th overall. Two flocks of eagles, the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia and the Super Eagles of Nigeria, are 27th and 31st, respectively. Reigning African champion Algeria is 35th overall, followed by Morocco at 43, Ghana at 47, and Egypt at 51. Rounding out the top 10 African teams, we have Cameroon at 53, followed by Mali and the Democratic Republic of Congo, which each have 1,389 ranking points and are tied at 56. Finally, let's give a sunny side of sports salute to the Zebras of Botswana, who began their 2021 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying campaign earlier this month with their first female assistant coach, the German Carolyn Braun. Braun says, and I quote, "I don't know if any other national team has a female assistant coach, so it's a good sign and an important sign nowadays to show that it's not a problem at all." And that wraps up the November 28th Thanksgiving Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger.
thanks also to VOA engineer Patrick Dea. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists at the University of Massachusetts Medical School are reporting success in research that may someday help people see things at night that now require the use of very expensive night vision goggles. After injecting a special type of material called upconversion nanoparticles into mice's eyes, the researchers found that the little rodents were able to see in the near-infrared light range. The scientists say the night vision nanoparticles converts low-energy photons from near-infrared light into higher energy light mice and other mammals can see. They reported that the mice maintained their night vision abilities for at least 10 weeks after the injection. Before trying this on humans, the scientists want to improve the safety and sensitivity of the nanomaterials. Researchers presented their findings at a recent meeting of the American Chemical Society. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Larry London. Don't miss your chance to get the Now 71 CD, including some of the top hit songs of today's biggest stars.
I can't write one song that's not about you. Can't drink with that.
The CD features Billie Eilish as Bad Guy.
So you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type, make your girlfriend mad type.
Lil Nas X, Old Town Road.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride.
And many of the greatest hits. You can only get the chance to win by listening to Border Crossings. Tune us in every day at 1500 UTC.